Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Ray Siemens, who is not only the online director of Progress Florida, he is also the founder and originator of Awake the State. Welcome, Ray.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, my friend. I've had the honor to know you for several years now, and I know you've been big behind the scenes, but it's nice to see you taking a more out front position. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how Awake the State originated?
Well, Awake the State is essentially a product of the aftermath of the 2010 midterm elections in many ways. In Florida, we kind of ended up with the nightmare scenario of having Governor Scott being elected governor, albeit narrowly, and two-thirds Republican majorities in both houses of the legislature. So a lot of the sort of really extreme anti-middle class legislation that we had been able to sort of bottle up in the state Senate or get Governor Crist to veto, that those barriers were now gone, and a lot of the horrible stuff that was waiting in the wings now sort of had a clear trajectory to becoming law. So I've also been very involved, in addition to, obviously I work for Progress Florida, but I've also been very involved with our growing public education movement in Florida, and there was a series of conference calls that took place after the election, and one of the recurring themes that kept coming up was we really ought to do something on the opening day of the legislative session to show Governor Scott and the legislature that we're serious about education funding, we're serious about reducing the testing burden on our students and on our districts, and we're serious about preserving the great programs that make our schools work so well. But we never really came up with an idea for that. And one morning, as I was kind of struggling to get out of bed, I began to think about this. The opening day of the legislative session was March 8th, and I started thinking of words that rhymed with 8th, and Awake came to mind, perhaps unsurprisingly. And so that's sort of how the name was born, Awake the State, March 8th. In terms of what we actually did on March 8th, which was a series of rallies, locally led rallies around the state, protesting Governor Scott and his deep budget cut plans and just the overall anti-middle class trajectory of policy that was going on. I took inspiration from a couple of sources, perhaps one being Hands Across the Sand, which is sort of also a very organic grassroots movement that sprung up in 2010, started by a restaurant owner in the panhandle of Florida, who wanted to have a bunch of rallies on the coast of Florida protesting offshore drilling. And again, all these were locally led. Progress Florida was privileged to be a part of that, and so I sort of had a front row seat to sort of how that worked, and it was a big success. I sort of incorporated that model into Awake the State, where we knew that there were a lot of angry people out there. We knew that Governor Scott, politically speaking, was kind of a soft target. I mean, yes, he had been elected by Floridians, but he was not elected by a majority of Floridians, only by a plurality, and his approval ratings were not great, to say the least. So we knew people were very angry about what Governor Scott was proposing, very clear, overreaching, extreme policies on education, on health care. His rejection of the high-speed rail funding really angered a lot of people, and the 20,000 jobs that probably went with that funding. But it also just so happens that, I came up with this idea on a Friday morning. That Sunday, there was a group of progressives meeting in Orlando at a gathering called LegiCamp, which, Rick, you were a part of.
I remember it very well.
And, this is just sort of a gathering of progressives from around the state to figure out what we were going to do during the legislative session, because obviously we didn't have any levers of power or anything like that, but we still wanted to make our voices known during session. And I presented the concept of Awake the State at the end of LegiCamp with a room full of progressive organizers and activists from across the state. I was very nervous because I wasn't sure whether people were really going to grab onto this concept or not. And if I didn't get a whole lot of buy-in right then and there, the idea probably would have died right then and there, because obviously the whole idea was predicated on the fact that people would be organizing different events in their communities. But people really loved the idea, and just as pretty much as we were leaving that day, we had the origins of probably a half a dozen local rallies right then and there. Basically the month that we had between Legit Camp and the opening day of legislative session, less than a month, was kind of a whirlwind of activity, of setting up our Facebook presence, which shot up to thousands of likes within a couple of weeks, and the tremendous outpouring of support for Awake the State, not only from sort of the grassroots and progressives who were starting events and creating Facebook events for rallies in their community before we could even get our website up and running, but also, you know, from state legislators, too. You know, we had folks like Representative Scott Randolph and Rick Kreisman and Jeff Clemens and Mark Pafford, and other people who were very supportive, you know, sort of from the sidelines, but were still very supportive of what we were doing and spreading the word to folks out in their communities. And so on March 8th, we actually had close to 40 rallies around the state of Florida, with over 15,000 people showing up and completely dominating local media coverage around the state, and really resetting the entire narrative about what that legislative session was going to be about. It wasn't just going to be a one-sided discussion about how much we needed to cut off from education and how many people we wanted to throw off of Medicaid and how many environmental protections we wanted to gut and get rid of. It was instead going to be about, there's also another side to this debate. There are people out there, lots of people, who very much disagree with this extreme anti-middle class agenda, and instead want corporations and big business to pay their fair share so that the rest of us, you know, who work hard can have the opportunity to succeed. And Awake the State really grew from there. I mean, it's a long way to answer your question there, Rick, but that's basically how it all got started.
Sometimes there's more than just a good idea. It's the good idea at the right moment to the right interests, and clearly you struck an important note with this idea. It must give you tremendous good feeling to see how much this idea has taken shape and grown on its own. I know you've recently been making some speeches out there and maybe taking the temperature, maybe throwing some new ideas out there. What's ahead for Awake the State?
What's ahead for us is kind of based on where we've been since March 8th. I mean, we've had all these, what happened organically, really, almost without my encouragement, without my doing, is a lot of people looked around after March 8th and realized, you know, it was nice to have the teachers and the firefighters and the environmental folks and folks from the pro-choice movement and folks from the LGBT community and folks from labor, et cetera, actually talking with each other and organizing and working together. And wouldn't it be nice if we sort of had, if we were coordinating like this all the time?
That's a hell of a coalition.
Indeed. So what ended up happening is good folks in Pinellas County were the first out of the gate with the sort of the local network idea, and Awake Pinellas was born, and not long after that you had networks springing up in key parts of the state, where particularly where the Awake the State rallies had been the biggest. So, you know, in South Florida and Miami and Broward and Palm Beach County, of course, but also in Tampa and Sarasota, where I am, here in Marion County, and we also had networks spring up in Jacksonville as well. And what these folks have been able to do, a lot of which has been on their own. I mean, I've certainly helped out where I can, but, you know, I'm only one guy at the end of the day. And, you know, they've helped us with the three other statewide rallies we did after March 8th, including one in January 10th on the opening of this year's legislative session. So the focus ahead is kind of building on those strengths to the degree that we can. I mean, this is, Awake the State is very much sort of the experiment that escaped the lab, if you will. And, you know, it's a very big thing now in terms of the people involved and the depth of these networks in terms of the contacts that they have and what they're doing. So building on our strengths in terms of ensuring that our local networks are focused on state and local issues, economic issues, although there are obviously exceptions to that, but for the most part staying focused on what's going on at the state and local level, where there's just not a lot of resources and attention being paid by sort of the wider progressive movement. There's obviously a lot of focus right now on the presidential race and the national scene, which is important, goodness knows, but there's also a ton happening at the state and local level, and the Awake the State networks really help draw attention and focus to those issues.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Rick.
One of the things I think was so marvelous about it and how it was able to capture such a broad coalition is it wasn't hung on any one issue, it wasn't hung on any one group, it was something that there could be a really wide buy-in.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, one of the reasons why initially we were very focused on Governor Scott's budget-cutting plans was because it affected such a wide array of groups and interests. And that this would be an excuse, and I use this phrase all the time in the first few weeks and months of Awake the State, is it was an excuse to bring the different wings of the progressive movement sort of together under one umbrella, and to harness and leverage the strength of all these different groups, which, even though it's almost a cliche thing to say, you know, divided they can't do as much as they can if they were much more united in their opposition to what was going on. And plus, I should also say that one of the great things that has come out of these networks is that for the first time, these people are actually talking to one another, which I know does not sound like much, and it's not a big hurdle to overcome. But, you know, often folks who are involved on key issues just talk to folks sort of in that camp. And they forget that they are part of a wider progressive pro-middle class movement. And so there's a huge benefit to actually having folks from these different groups and interests meeting together almost on a monthly basis in most places, to actually talk and see what each other is doing and coordinating accordingly. And what folks have found is that, you know, boy, this is a lot easier from what we were doing before, in terms of thinking we were just kind of the only forward-thinking people out there in our community. Turns out there's a whole lot more, and they've got resources, and they've got friends, and they've got contacts, and we can help each other.
That doesn't always work out
that beautifully, but I mean, you know, coalition work kind of is a double-edged sword sometimes, in that it can also raise sort of turf issues as well, but for the most part, the overwhelming reaction has been positive and very productive.
I was just going to say, I've been around this progressive movement, progressive coalitions for a long time. And I remember when unions and progressive activists or anti-war activists or green activists really, really did not see the commonality of interests. And to see that, to see them allied with teachers, to see them allied with homeless advocates, to see them aligned with, you know, union carpenters, for sake of argument, that to me was just really beautiful, beyond words beautiful, to see these coalitions come together like that. And I think Awake the State was the perfect vehicle for that. As of right now, are there any Awake the State events planned for either on election-related issues, on voter access-related issues, on even the, you know, the presidential or state elections level, or are you going to see that arise organically?
Between now and the election, a lot of the activity is coming out organically. You know, what I think, in my conversations with a lot of the network leaders and participants, you know, there's sort of an overwhelming consensus that, you know, we're going to do what we can in terms of raising the profile of these state and local issues that need to be raised, and also holding accountable those legislators who have voted with Rick Scott's really extreme anti-middle class agenda 100% of the time over the last couple of years. There's going to be some focus on those folks. But I think the thrust of Awake the State is going to probably happen after the election, because what And this is something, unfortunately, many of us haven't been thinking about enough lately, is that there will be life after November. It may not seem like it right now, particularly for those who are very involved in campaigns. And there's a really critical period that's going to happen between post-election November and March of next year, when the legislature reconvenes, when the new legislature reconvenes. The risk that is out there, the danger that's out there, is that legislatures in off years, which 2013 will be an off year, tend to be much more extreme, much more radical than legislatures in election years, like 2012 or 2014. So all indications are, you know, the Democrats are going to gain some seats in the legislature, but they're not going to be in the majority. And Rick Scott's still going to be governor, you know, until at a minimum January 2015. So there's a lot of bad things that we were able to actually beat in 2012, thanks to a coalition of moderate Republican senators who were term limited, unfortunately, and the Democratic caucus in the state Senate, which were able to block a lot of nasty things like prison privatization, like the insidious parent trigger, along with other things that were added. Those were probably two real big ones. But those things will inevitably be brought back again in the next session, along with the fact that, you know, the budget picture still doesn't look that great, and we risk cutting yet more out of the budget, which means, you know, education and Medicaid will be in danger again, likely, along with whatever little environmental protections we have left. So there's going to be a real void there that's going to need to be filled, and a way to state, thanks to these local networks, will probably be well positioned to fill that, in the sense of potentially doing rallies again in March of next year. I say potentially, we haven't finalized that yet, or other productive actions that we think we could take to advance a progressive and pro-middle class agenda.
Let me ask you a question. I, like you, have been so happy to see this coalition building, progressives coming together because of this kind of across-the-board Alec Koch brothers driven agenda. But I have to say to you, I wonder with this stranglehold on voting access that Florida is not alone in experiencing. I'm just wondering, with a severely tampered election, with a Justice Department that seems somehow reluctant to pursue this issue, I'm wondering just what kind of draconian results we're about to face, where the Republicans have basically, you know, prohibited an important, significant portion of the Democratic electorate from even voting.
Yeah, I don't know, and we won't know probably until after the election. And while there's certainly a lot of effort going in right now to ensuring people are voting, I mean, there's a tremendous effort happening in terms of getting progressive voters to vote by mail and vote early and bank their votes now, so that on election day, if there are, you know, major shenanigans, that we can avoid a lot of that. But, you know, we won't know for certain, I think, until November 7th, day after the election. So, but I do think that as progressives, you know, we've really got to start preparing for the post-election world.
Sure.
Which I know, again, sounds a little crazy because, you know, we are sort of, our heads are really in this, are in the election right now, as we should be. You know, it, obviously our post-election plans will differ radically based on how things turn out, whether the president's reelected or not, and what Congress looks like, what the legislature looks like, and in some cases what our local governments even look like. You know, but we do need to start sort of looking ahead to that and sort of mentally preparing ourselves for another sort of pitched battle in early 2013, with again, which will still be a very radically extreme right-wing anti-middle class legislature.
Well, it seems that the stealth campaign against women's reproductive access, which we saw arise even though they never ran on it last time around, is reaching a new fever pitch with this interesting fellow in Missouri who is by no means alone in this prohibition of women's access to abortions, even contraception, the personhood approach, which Vice President candidate presumed Ryan was a co-signer of, co-sponsor of. I think we're facing a really interesting watershed, and you know, I hope that progressive votes are actually counted and Democrats can participate in elections. I won't ask you to break out your crystal ball, but you want to reflect for just a minute on this interesting anti-woman approach the Republicans are running on?
Yeah, it's amazingly counterproductive considering women are the majority of the voters who show up on election day, and particularly for progressives, you know, women essentially provide the margin of victory, whether it be national or statewide elections, and the Republicans are helping us pad that margin. So I think that's very nice of them. But I do also want to focus on the fact that here in Florida that we've got some big issues regarding women's health, notably Amendment 6, which is on people's ballots in November. And Amendment 6 is a really awful amendment, like practically all of the constitutional amendments that will be on your ballot, on your Florida ballot in November. Amendment 6 would allow tremendous political interference into women's basic health care decisions, and that's just something we really need to defeat and really just sort of make an example of to show that women and men in Florida are not going to tolerate this level of political interference in basic health care for women, and also I should add essential health care for women as well. And if I could actually just briefly plug their website, if you go to VoteNoOn6.com, you can actually learn more about that really awful amendment and get involved, and I encourage people to do that. There's also one that's kind of related, which is Amendment 8, which would basically remove the wall, the separation between church and state when it comes to funding and state funding of private religious institutions and programs, and certainly folks also need to get out and vote no on 8 as well, because that also would do tremendous damage to indirectly, but would do some serious damage to women's rights and women's health as well. So two issues to keep in mind if you're focusing on those things in Florida.
I heard an interesting discussion last night on Rachel's Maddow's show, where they were pointing out the fact that okay, the Republicans have alienated Hispanics. They're showing 0% of African Americans in favor of the Romney Ryan ticket, and clearly women are receiving no favors. Now, running against women, African Americans, and Hispanics seems like a very odd political posture.
It is. It really is. And certainly, you know, in the next 10 to 20 years, that's just poison to any political party movement or ideas to be, you know, that much despised by such a demographic coalition that represents the majority of the country and will increasingly become almost a supermajority of the country in the coming decades. It's pretty bewildering, and it's clear that it's at least the short-term strategy anyway of the far right is to suppress the vote, which is their only play. That's the only way that they could possibly win elections in the face of sort of this overwhelming demographic movement against them, which also I think points to something that progressives need to be focusing on as well, because oftentimes I think we spend a tremendous amount of time sort of in a defensive posture reacting to the latest outrage from the other side. Well, that's part of what we have to do. We also have to start building our own alternative and start to advocate for what we would like.
Absolutely.
As I think inevitably, I knock on wood, I think inevitably, progressives progressives continue to gain power throughout the country in the coming years, largely lifted by those demographics that the right is ignoring or trying to suppress. So we have to start talking about not only removing a lot of the awful restrictions that the Voter Suppression Act has done here in Florida and similar versions have done in states throughout the country. We also need to start talking about expanding early voting. We have to start talking about same-day registration, that is, people can actually register to vote and vote on Election Day, as opposed to sort of having these dead zone periods where the books close, as the supervisors of elections say, and you know you can't register to vote in a certain election within a month's time of the election. These are reforms that other states have pursued with great success in terms of raising voter turnout and citizen participation in their elections. And of course, we also have to start talking about the bigger stuff too, which is how campaigns are funded, and the fact that big money continues to control, unfortunately control, a lot of our election outcomes and has a disproportionate influence, on our democratic society, and that's not something that can be sustained into the future. If we're going to have a democracy, we need to have a much more level playing field in our elections and in our public life. We don't have that right now. So we have to start also, in addition to, blasting the really draconian, awful, extreme anti-voting and anti-democratic proposals being pushed through legislatures and pushed by right-wing governors, we also have to start talking about, a progressive alternative that increases and expands our democracy as well as protects it.
Unlike that terribly misnamed Citizens United, which really should be translated into Corporations United, Billionaires United. A very terrible influence. I understand you're going to be out of state during the Republican shenanigans. You're going to a conference.
Yes. I've managed to conveniently, I have to go to a conference.
Do you know anything about a progressive roundup or something?
Be escaping the Republican convention and Hurricane Isaac all at the same time. So, it's a nice time to get away.
Can you talk about the Progress Now meeting you're going to?
Yeah, well, it's there are people like me in states throughout the country, and in terms of online directors for state-based progressive organizations. We're getting together to talk about, tactics and success stories and failures and lessons learned. So it should be an eventful few days.
Well, great. I want to thank you so much, Ray, for joining us. Ray is the online director for Progress Florida, also the founder of that very, very effective coalition, the Awake the State movement here in Florida. Thank you so much, Ray. Any final thoughts you want to leave?
I think we've done some remarkable things over the last couple of years in advancing sort of a progressive pro-middle class movement in Florida, but we certainly have our work cut out for us in the years ahead as we're going to make some minor gains, I think, in November, but there's a lot more work to be done and folks need to stay involved.
Thanks again, Ray.
Thanks, Rick.